What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
With us on America Trends is Ray Sheehan, and he is the founder of Old City Media, a North American event production and experiential marketing agency. And in the old days, would I have called you an advertising agency or a public relations firm? Or how much have things changed and evolved? Because today, everybody's trying to get their message out, and there are so many different devices, techniques that one can use. So how much of the old is incorporated into the new experiential marketing?
First off, thank you so much for having me. Pleasure to be a guest on the podcast. You're exactly right. And if you really think about it, look at just brands. And brands now need to have a different product extension and a different SKU. But yes, you're right. If we were talking and it was 1960, we're a marketing and advertising agency. Now what the agencies are doing, and I think it's smart. I think it's a really good idea. If you're a marketing agency, what are you really specializing in? What is your area of expertise? And I think that's the way the agencies have really evolved and marketing has really evolved. Like, if you're going to be an agency, you're going to be a marketing professional. What area of expertise? Where can you provide the most amount of insight? And that's the lane we're in. We really are heading down the experiential marketing lane.
Okay, now, if I were in the business, as I was to some extent many years ago, and I would put out news releases, and I would target various audiences with direct mail, I would do all of these things in support of a nonprofit organization that I was involved with. Tell me how different my job would be today, because I think people need to get a sense of what it takes to get the word out, if I could just say it as simply as possible.
You're right. And if you think about it, the problem today, it's just a very, very crowded space. And certain brands, and think about it, you came from a nonprofit, and I mean this in all due respect, nonprofits just don't have the type of budget that a for-profit has. So what you see is the company or brand that has the loudest voice, that has the biggest marketing budget, they're the ones that are really going to get the share of voice. So you're absolutely right. So what you need to do is you kind of need to think creatively of saying, okay, I have a limited number of dollars. I need to make sure that I really stretch these dollars. I need to make sure I'm getting the best return on investment with my marketing dollars, because you're absolutely right. Consumers, us, we're getting peppered with a million different messages. And the landscape has really changed, and it's becoming more and more expensive. Let's think about it. I'm not exactly sure when this podcast is going to air, but we're heading into 2024. It's going to be an election year. We're not going to talk politics today, but we are going to talk about it's going to be very expensive to advertise. So you're going to have politicians that are really going to dominate the space. All your kind of above the line, out of home, it becomes very, very expensive. Our agency comes in and saying, hey, listen, how do we engage the consumer? How do we have a conversation with that consumer? And how do we do that in an experiential way?
Now, what is an experiential way in your mind?
Yeah, the best way of putting it is really take the word experience. And for us, it's advertising works. Put an ad up. The more ads you put up, the more frequency you get, there's a much higher probability someone's going to buy your product. We don't understand that. Mm-hmm. The experiential marketing takes it one step further and says, we're actually going to give you the ability to integrate your brand into the fabric of the community and start to have a conversation with your potential end user. And what it does is it really cuts through all that clutter. All that mass media clutter kind of goes away. And now you're there having a real intimate conversation with your potential consumer. And you're able to market and promote your brands or services, whatever it is that you're selling, in a very organic way. And the idea is that that consumer is going to walk away from that experience having a much more favorable kind of opinion of your products. That's really what experiential marketing does. It really takes your brand and gets your brand out into the marketplace.
Does that mean that I have to be on social media, that I have to touch you directly where you are? I have to find you through these various algorithms that these various platforms have developed, and I've got to keep insisting that you look at me, or I have to provide you with some kind of content that really gets your attention. And how much of that is old school, where you do the mass media over the top? So you've got some TV, you've got some radio, maybe some outdoor, and then you bore down on the social media or the internet digital platform.
Again, that's going to be predicated on budget, but yes, you're exactly right. And what we'd like to do is like, hey, how do we engage that consumer? How do we have a conversation with that consumer, both online and offline? Social media changed everything, right? It really did. Where it's, you can now take a marketing campaign and become so much more sophisticated with your marketing campaigns based off of likes, interest, demo, geo. There's a lot of different things that social media allows you to do as a marketer, so you can make sure that you're really having the conversation or you're interacting with your target customer. But if you're asking me as a marketer, and I love experiential marketing, I love taking brands and getting brands out into the community. I don't tell our clients or brands like, hey, you shouldn't be placing an ad on the radar. You shouldn't be doing a TV buy, or you shouldn't be doing any sort of out of home. That would not be a really good recommendation. I think all that works, again, being mindful of budget. The more conversations, the more impressions you're getting, to me, in the end, you're probably going to get the type of results you're looking for, which is just that awareness and exposure.
Given all the tools available to you today as a marketing expert, are you able to understand the market much better in a much more granular way than those of us who practiced this art years ago were able to?
So if you look at it, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, right? It was, the marketing was a lot different. And there were certain avenues to get your message across, and whether it was print, radio, TV, billboard, right? And so not that you needed to be the most sophisticated marketer out there, but there weren't a lot of vehicles for you to really get the word out, right? You could do some creative stuff, but ultimately you knew your target audience. You knew your target audience maybe read a publication or subscribed to a newspaper or traveled down a certain road or watched a certain television. Like, you understood where your target audience was, so you could engage them while they were in their play space, so to speak. Now, and the way that social is and the way that the internet is and the way that they're constantly changing the algorithms, yes, you're right, there takes a certain skill set to make sure that you are adapting with all the different changes that are happening within social media. Right when you think you have it figured out, there's an update, or there's some sort of a change, or there's something now you need to do, or you need to further educate yourself on how am I really going to be able to engage my target audience. And I need to make sure I'm doing it in a mindful way. I need to really kind of keep an eye on our KPI, what are our real key performance indicators, and I'm just not wasting a ton of money. So it's really difficult for me to answer that question. The only thing I can tell you right now is that it is not as simple as just reaching out and placing a full-page ad in a magazine where you know your audience is. There's a lot more layers and a lot more thinking that goes into kind of today's marketing strategies.
That's what I was thinking, that it is much more difficult. And do you get frustrated as a marketing professional when you see that somebody in their basement puts out a short form video, and all of a sudden, 2 million people latch on to this person, this personality, someone who becomes an influencer. And then, of course, there are products that want to get into that space. They want to sell to the audience that this person has built. The influencer today, does that supplant a lot of these other more conventional techniques?
I have to be honest with you, it annoys the heck out of me. Because you have a lot of clients that are, they want to engage an influencer. And for every Kim Kardashian out there, there are a million other influencers that can really help your brand. So you're right. Every now and then, a video will go viral. But there's so many, there's other things that a brand manager, a marketer can do as it relates to influencers. And this could be an influencer that is an influencer to mommy groups. And he or she may have like an audience of like 5 or 10,000 people. Well, that 5 or 10,000, it's not 5 or 10 million people, but that influencer, while it's small, has, I don't want to say has just as much influence, but obviously has an influence within their community. And there's a lot of things that you can do from an economic perspective to kind of engage that influencer, to have that influencer tell your story. But the likelihood of a brand having an influencer latch on to their marketing strategy or whatever their creative was and have it go, it's very, very hard to do that. It's very challenging to do that. Every now and then you hit the lottery. Every now and then someone does buy a lottery ticket. So it does happen, but there's other things to do that are just more practical as it relates to dealing with influencers and making sure you're getting what you need out of it from that called subgroup.
Well, how much do you have to mimic the influencer? By that I mean, we've had company spokespersons for years. Hi, I'm so-and-so, and I want to sell you a Medicare Advantage plan. And it's usually an older, gray, very distinguished-looking gentleman who you've known on television for years. And you say to yourself, wait a minute, that's a paid spokesperson. So do I really want to listen to this person when the best thing he ever did in his life was throw a football and not sell me a Medicare Advantage plan? In other words, has this changed the authenticity aspect of what you have to do? Do you also have to do short-term or short-run videos? It seems as if everybody's got a video camera that they're using today to get out their message. You're competing in a sea, a swamp, if you will, of attention activists who are really trying to come forward, whether it's politically, whether it's for a product, whether it's for themselves, their book, their video, their album, whatever it may be. It's just so incredibly intense, it seems.
You're exactly right. And the reality is that example that used of that former player or any sort of celebrity that has some sort of cachet, that still works. It really does. I'd be lying to you if I told you it didn't work, but there is a consumer base out there that sees a celebrity, whatever, and that celebrity, whatever it is in their lens, like you said, it could be an athlete, a politician, TV, what you name it, and they do have an influence. What I like to do is find an influencer where you share the same core values or they have a passion or a love, and it could be about a brand. It could be a corporate social responsibility, a CSR. There is probably something out there that celebrity who is now endorsing your product. Now, as you mentioned, it's so much more of an authentic message, and it comes across in such organic way. So yes, I like leveraging influencers. Yes, you can find the celebrity, and that will work to a lot of people. That just looks very fake. But if you go next level, if you do a little research, you can probably find an influencer out there that aligns with your brand. And to me, that is to getting your message across, it comes across in a much better way.
Ray Sheehan is with us. He is the founder of Old City Media, a North American event production and experiential marketing agency. I'd like to do something a little bit different. I'd like to take you through a case example and see what you think about what's happening here, because products are coming so fast onto the shelves, new ways of getting products to people, new forms of delivery, the at-home purchase. There's so many things going on that are so disruptive in America today. And I want to take you into Weight Watchers, because I just read an interesting article on CNN.com. Ozempic and Wegovy have upended the diet industry. So why is the Weight Watchers CEO betting the company's future on them? So they have a new CEO, and we know Weight Watchers has been a really good brand over a long period of time, but they're betting that the diet culture is over. And so this woman who joined the group recently, her name is Sistani, began making radical changes. Now listen to this. She ended thousands of the company's notorious in-person workshops, and I know that's where people went virtually every week to weigh in. Closed storefronts, shifted the company's focus to new weight management drugs, I mean, she did a whole range of things. But she said that part of the reason that the wellness pivot that she took didn't work is because it was a marketing move. It wasn't a product, and we didn't change enough of how we showed up to really be in a change mode and a wellness company. So tell me, what do you see in this? I'm bringing you into this because you are expert in this area. What's happening here with weight lossers, and how emblematic is this of the changes so many companies have to make?
So my knee-jerk reaction is I don't know enough about the space, I'll give you an answer just purely from a marketing standpoint. Obviously, I don't know enough about their business, have not sat in any sort of strategy meetings and stuff like that. So first off, I personally do not like making very radical changes. Like, to me, that feels very radical. I can understand why they're doing it, right? Numbers are probably down. All the buzz that you're seeing on TV, consumers have the attention span the size of a gnat. So now there's a pill out there that can help them lose weight. So on the surface, we as consumers can kind of understand that. And as a CEO, you can probably look at that and be like, that's the answer over there. We're going to completely abandon everything that we've done over here and just run towards the shiny object. I probably wouldn't do that. I think I'm maybe more pragmatic. I'm more of a test measure type of person. And mm-hmm. I like to make decisions off of like a real sample size. So for me, doing something as radical and as extreme as that, I probably wouldn't do that. But then again, I'm not a CEO of a dollar company.
So, well, she is saying that as a result of this explosion in the popularity of these drugs, there is a lack of knowledgeable practitioners safely prescribing them, and that's a role that Weight Watchers can fill. Now, that's a really important thing to believe or recognize or try to invest your future in, saying, how do we develop a complementary role in this new weight loss world?
Yeah, so they essentially are taking on the role. So I do like providing education, insight. Like, to me, those are really good tools. So anyone out there listening, and you can apply this to your own business, anytime that you can educate and you can provide insight and you can help a consumer make a decision, whether it's home improvement, auto, you name it, this will work in any sort of vertical. Anyone out there listening, anytime that you can do that, I am 100% on board on that. So I'm not sure if I misunderstood what you were asking. So I'm okay with that. The part that I'm kind of wrestling with is kind of abandoning all the things that they've done in the past. Like, I've seen Weight Watchers at your local Rite Aid. Like, I've seen them at local pharmacies. Like, I think what they do on an on-premise within the community is a good thing. Like, I probably wouldn't totally abandon that. But coming out and saying, hey, we're going to provide some more insight. We're going to help the consumer make really smart decisions by providing information that's not currently out there. I personally like that. I think that does a really good job as it relates to getting leads into your funnel. So whether you're doing this online, whether you're doing this on TV, especially online, and you're telling consumers, hey, you can come here as the lead funnel to gather all this information to see if this works for you. I love that, and I like that in all verticals of business.
She was saying that about 80% of the membership for Weight Watchers had moved to digital only, and yet, she said, we still had this app that functioned as though it was a companion to in-person meetings. So the question is, if you're really looking for volume, and the online experience does provide that for you, are there many people who come to you with their problems and say, I just want you to bore down and find me an audience online that I can continue to interact with? I don't want to do all this over-the-air stuff. I don't know if anybody's listening to radio anymore. Television is so splintered. There's no water cooler activity any longer. Everybody's watching their own thing, and I can't quite figure out where I'd put my money there. What do you say to someone like that?
I would agree with them, and I would say that, you know, you see it every day where a lot of these local newspapers used to be very, very thick, and now they're very, very thin. and marketers are getting smarter about, you know, if you're trying to find your target audience, there's a lot of tools out there that can just help us make smarter decisions. There's technology out there that can help us make smarter decisions. So if you are a brand and you're trying to figure out a way to kind of engage your target audience, there are tools out there that can help you really narrow down and get super granular to find your target audience. So I would agree with them. Yeah, just throwing up an ad on a billboard and hoping that someone driving down I-95 sees your ad. Yeah, you're hoping. There's other things that you can do to probably safeguard and obviously have a stronger KPI as it relates to placing an ad or doing things that are more digital friendly.
Well, let me take outdoor for a second. Not that I know a lot about it, but my son does because he's got a major job with an outdoor company that everybody mm-hmm. knows, and he's involved in that digital space. That has evolved to such a degree. I remember when we used to paste up a billboard and we couldn't take it down for 30 days, right? Unless you had a union guy and two helpers. Now, every 8 to 10 seconds, that message is changing.
Yep.
And that does reach about 99% of the people except those who don't like to go out at all. So, and it's really able to be targeted just like you do online because you know that the Dunkin' Donuts crowd in the morning, you want to reach them if you've got something to tell them just as they're about to purchase their coffee. How has that changed as a medium, the outdoor space?
Yeah, I was always a big fan of outdoor. I'm just a big fan of advertising, honestly. For me, it's all about frequency. And Coca-Cola did not place one ad and then just say, okay, our job is done here. Like, it just doesn't work like that. So if you are these larger global brands, you constantly need to remind consumers about how amazing your coffee is at Dunkin' Donuts. You really do. So how has it changed? Yeah, I'm sure your son can probably speak to this. Yes, there are your static billboard ads. You put an ad up, you're there for 30, 60, 90 days, whatever your term or agreement is with whatever agency that you're working with. Now with the ability of the digital boards, as we call them, you're able to change your messaging. Like right now, it's, again, I know that, you know, this podcast, I want to kind of keep it evergreen, but
yes.
When, you know, there's certain times of the year where you want to change things, you want to talk about things. The digital ad gives you the ability to be extremely nimble with your messaging based off of the time of year or based off of what's happening with current events. I love those ads. And then obviously if you're a marketer, you're loving those ads because it gives you the opportunity to constantly change your creative and be, you know, very creative and think about what's going on from the consumer landscape. So digital ads have always been a big part of our marketing plan. I think that they do work, but ultimately sometimes the biggest challenge with the ads is that you're not going to get with, let's say, on digital or through the market is like, well, Ray, help me run a report. Yeah, I can talk about how many vehicles went past that ad, and you can kind of probably run some pretty good analytics. But as it relates to giving me a report or a recap as it relates to placing and doing a campaign online, you're able to get just much more granular.
What about radio versus podcasts? We're on a podcast right now. I've been in radio for many years as well as television. So tell me how different that space is now because of podcasting.
Again, you're looking at another vertical that is, it's an extremely crowded space, but it's kind of like the same example we just used. People still listen to the radio. People are still in their car and they're driving from point A to point B. So yes, in the morning, placing a McDonald's or Dunkin' ad, there's value there. I can't say that there's not. To me, podcasting, it's just really different. So anyone out there that's listening right now should have their own podcast. They are a fantastic tool for A, to market your business and to grow your business. It now gives you the opportunity to have a conversation with someone you're trying to do business with. So I think a podcast is really kind of next level thinking. It's a great way to, if you're a brand, to really figure out, okay, we know who our target audience is. How do we get in front of those people? These podcasts, like radio, you know, radio speaks to, hey, it's a pop station, it's a rock station, it's sports talk radio. You kind of get a sense of an idea. But to me, where podcast is different is if you're a brand, great, you can now market and advertise. But what if you took it one step further? What if you became the brand? What if you became the radio station? You created your own podcast. You started bringing on guests. You could provide all this insight. You could provide all this knowledge. So for me, when I talk to brands and companies, I tell them, start your own podcast. Have those conversations. Bring on guests that you would like to do business with. Have that conversation. And now once you get down that podcast, the likelihood of them potentially wanting to do business with you increases dramatically.
So there's interaction there. You're sensing the personality, the ethos of the person providing it. How important is it with your own web presence, whether you're a business or a service, to have video and audio there as opposed to just words and maybe some still images?
Picture's worth 1,000 words. A video is probably worth 1,000,000. And the reality is, and I think I said it earlier, consumers we just don't have the attention span. And the likelihood, again, not everyone. Some people are they just love data. They love information. They're going to go onto your website. They're going to read every single thing. Like, people are out there and they're still programmed to do that. Unfortunately, everyone else, it really just wants, okay, just give me the 30,000 foot view. Give me the high level overview. Give it to me in a video short form so I can understand what's going on. And then if you get my attention, if you have me, you've piqued my interest, well, now I'm going to dig deeper. But if you don't have that video on your website, if you're not using video through social, if you're not taking your message, and we're actually working on a video right now, a newer video, because I believe in it myself, it's a great way to capture the attention of your target audience and kind of get them into your ecosystem, as you're saying, or get them into your actual lead funnel. So I'm a big fan of videos, and everyone out there should be doing them, short and long.
When you look at things like Yelp, or you look at Trustpilot and such, many people think that is gospel, and yet I just did a podcast where there is a lot of fakery that goes on online with online reviews, and yet so many people, I would imagine you'd agree, use them, Ray, as a way to really determine what their next purchase or their next restaurant visit is going to be, and we can't really trust them, can we, totally?
I'd like to think that they are authentic. So I personally, I look at Google reviews in a way that, yes, there is some authenticity there. Like, Google for me is a company that you can trust. In other words, if someone, like, so we talked about influencers earlier. There are marketing agencies out there, and we all know this, where you can buy influencers. So you have this huge network. You have this huge audience of 10, 50, 100. 100,000 of those followers could be fake. I mean, this is real. People should Google this stuff, right? That they do not exist. So for me, when I look at a Google review, I know Google. There's a certain sense of integrity with Google. So I personally do carry some weight. If someone has a business or a service offering, if they have a strong Google review, I tend to believe, and I could be totally wrong, I think there's some truth to that. I think the service grading and the rating system on Google is as accurate as you're going to get. Yes, some of these other websites, yes, 100%, it's pay to play. You can boost yourself up. So, yes, buyer beware, travel with caution. But I'd like to think that Google is a pretty trusted resource.
I know in some materials that I received from your group, corporate social responsibility, don't just say what you believe, take action. And yet that can be very tremulous in these times. It seems risky. Look at Disney and Bud Light and others. It's a very difficult thing in a fractured society as we have today to determine what you want to do to get closer to your consumer, even if you know that you are appealing to a much broader base than those who may be critical of the action that you're taking, but those who are critical can stir up a real hornet's nest. What do you say to companies who want to get involved?
So there's ways of getting involved with your CSR, and then there's ways of doing it. Here's the problem. Common sense is just, for whatever reason, just lost. There are ways to come in and create your CSR in a very common sense way. We're going to have more empathy, or we're going to think about our employees, or we want to have a better footprint on the world. Who is ever going to give you any issues with creating a better work environment or creating a better footprint on the world that we live in today? Like, you don't need to go so left or so right with your CSR. There are certain things that you can do to create just a better company culture. and that will empower your team. So I think companies should be doing this, and I think your employees will value this. I think the problem is companies, certain times they go in one way or the other way, and I'm not sure who's making these decisions. And you're right, it's reckless. You did not need to go down that path. Understand what you're doing. You want to have a conversation with everyone, but don't alienate your base. That would be my recommendation.
You mentioned earlier about AI, and it seems to sneak its way into just about every conversation today. You say that we should incorporate AI, whether that's streamlining the process, analyzing data to make smarter marketing decisions. What's the best use in a marketing sense for somebody who's trying to reach an audience to use AI?
It would really depend on your specific business. But so we do a lot of experiential marketing. Like that's our, if I can give an example here. So when our marketers or when our brands are looking to go out in into the marketplace, and whether they're at a retail store or a grocery store, there's tools out there. You just need to research this where that let the technology, let the data kind of dictate on what you should be doing. And I'll explain that just so everyone kind of conceptualize that. When you walk into a store, typically, right, you'll walk into a store, not your grocery store, because I feel like once you go to a grocery store, you're kind of in the same thing. When everyone listening to this podcast probably go to the grocery store, you go left, you go right, you probably just go through your normal thing. It's kind of like rinse and repeat. But when you're typically going into a store, maybe for the first time, you're generally going somewhere. Your attention's taking you somewhere. There's information out there. There's data out there that we're collecting to really understand why is the consumer going that way? What's taking them on that path? And then the fact that the consumers are actually walking in this direction, making a left there, making a right there, this is kind of like the most popular traveled road inside that space. This is where we want to place our top items. These are areas and things that we want to sell. This is messaging that we want to get across. We wouldn't have known that without AI. We would not have known that without technology. Humans could probably figure it out in 100 years, but the technology's out there that can do it in a much faster, quicker way. So for anyone out there, whether it could be your email marketing, like figuring out smarter ways to kind of, you know, segment your list or email marketing, you really need to think about it from your business of like, how are you having a conversation with your consumer? And whether it's through social or through email, or I use that example, actually physically at a brick and mortar, figuring out what your objective is. What is your challenge? And then at that point, is there an AI solution out there to kind of solve your problem? And my guess, there probably is.
I know I put you on the spot earlier when I asked you about Weight Watchers. But I'll put you on the spot one more time. What's the best marketing campaign that you have seen in the recent period? And you say, wow, they really did it. They hit it out of the park. Can you give me one?
So here's one that I love, and I think they do a fantastic job because they really incorporate everything. And that's probably my favorite. And it's State Farm. And it's fun. There's a celebrity component there. They tap into radio. They tap into billboards. They tap into TV. And then what they do is they take it one step further, and they also tap into going out into the community. And whether it's kind of aligning themselves with sports teams. And for me, if you're a brand, and it's no wonder why airline companies and big banks, they sponsor arenas. If you want to immediately engage a community, align yourself with the sports teams. You just get an immediate affinity towards that community. And State Farm is really, really smart on how they do that, whether it's at a ballpark or whether it's at an NFL football stadium. So they do all this out of home. They do all this marketing when you're watching the games or you're watching TV or you're watching your favorite special. And then they're tying it into an experiential standpoint where they're actually taking the consumer's picture, and then putting that on a bobblehead and giving that consumer their own personal bobblehead. And now for me, that is really cool because you're having a conversation with that consumer like we discussed earlier, and you're talking to them in such an organic way, and then you're actually giving them something. And that something is not a keychain. It's not a pen. It's something that's probably going to live in that person's home or office. And now your brand messaging just keeps going. The shelf life on that, I couldn't even tell you. So I love what State Farm is doing, and there's multiple agencies working on that, and they're doing it online, and they're doing it offline.
In closing, let me give you two idioms that I've heard over the years. Edward Bernays, public relations is doing good and communicating it. And then the second about advertising, the best way to kill a bad product is to advertise it. Still true, both of those?
I'd have to noodle on that, but I'm going to say yes.
All right. Ray Sheehan, it's been really a pleasure to talk with you today. Ray is the founder of Old City Media, and he doesn't sound like he's old or that his ideas are at all. A North American event production and experiential marketing agency. If anybody perchance would like to reach you, found you interesting, and they have a problem they need to solve in a marketing realm, how can they reach you, Ray?
Yeah, we would love to have a conversation with anyone out there, especially your listeners. They can go to oldcitymedia.com or just simply email me at Ray, R-A-Y, at oldcitymedia.com.
All right, that's terrific. I thank you so much for being with me today. A very interesting conversation here on America Trends.
Thank you for having me.